If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Hey everyone, this is Chuck R. Fine, and you're listening to the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you as always by Wintrust. Well, on today's podcast, it's going to be one I frankly haven't done before, this kind of subject matter, but listen, our city, our country is experiencing a whole lot of pain, anger, and fear over what's happening across America stemming from the death of George Floyd. And while this is a baseball podcast, and I would like nothing more than to talk White Sox baseball right now, what's happening right now, though, in our city is bigger than that. And I wanted to devote this podcast to talk about it. And to talk about it with two people who I admire and respect, and who can identify with what's happening a lot more than I can. So first up, it's my colleague at NBC Sports Chicago, and he's also a diehard White Sox fan. Lawrence Holmes will come on and join me to discuss what he's feeling and seeing going on and how we as a people and society can come together. And then later, Tim Anderson, who was on Sports Talk Live with me and David Kaplan, will speak with us about race, about police brutality, and also what gives him hope. I have hope for all of us. And I hope you do too. So here is Lawrence Holmes and Tim Anderson on the White Sox Talk Podcast.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark!
You can't put it on the board! Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
All right, Lawrence Holmes, I've been meaning to have you on the White Sox Talk Podcast to talk about the White Sox. At some point, we are going to do that. We're going to go deep and talk about White Sox baseball and hopefully a 2020 season with the White Sox. But these are extraordinary times, and I appreciate you coming on to talk about what is happening and kind of guide us through, well, first off, what you're feeling as an African-American while we are living in this current time.
It's been... through it with friends of all persuasions. Like the common theme that I keep coming back across with is there's a lot of weight on all of us right now. The pandemic itself has brought about a lot of weight, and we've been in a fear mode for 3 months. We've been living at home. We've been kind of confined to our homes in our immediate area. You add that into some of the things that have happened over the last few weeks, where you have Ahmaud Arbery being murdered while jogging. You have the woman in New York who was weaponizing the police to call the police on a black man because he wanted her to follow the law and put her dog on a leash. And then you have George Floyd and his murder and the having to wait on him getting on his murderers being arrested. Like, if I'd be upset if we went through the justice system and those officers were tried and then not convicted, I'd be upset. But the fact that there are still three officers that haven't been arrested is, it's hard for any of us to wrap our heads around, because if you and I were to commit a crime, there wouldn't be all the hand-wringing about arresting us. They would just arrest us and then sort it out. You add that to the history of what it's like between black men and the police in the United States. And it becomes a very dreadful and sad and depressing state. Having to sift my way like through that has been difficult. And I'm not special in that regard. I think that there are a lot of people that are doing the exact same thing. And they're trying to figure out if any of this makes sense. Why are we going through this yet again? And every time that there's something like this, we're stuck to try and answer, well, why does that still happen? Well, why are there these inequalities when it comes to policing that go unregulated and we still haven't come to any solutions on how to make those things better?
I want to get to solutions later, because actually Brian Jordan posted something that really, you know, resonated with me as an outsider, not knowing. I can't begin to understand what the African-American community is going through, but I want to know what's justice? Is justice, obviously, this man needs to be put away for a long, long time. And then the other three police officers, do you feel like the police departments around the country will eventually get the message? Or does something have to, or does it have to come from the people? And I think the people are letting this message be heard loud and clear.
I've been encouraged that there have been so many officers that have been willing to put themselves on the record and say that those officers need to be arrested. Even the chief in Minneapolis has said as such. And that's why when the chief of police doesn't have the authority to arrest people that he suspects of murder, the rest of us shake our heads and go, huh? Like that doesn't pass the smell test at all. But hearing some of these officers in places where you wouldn't expect, I've seen videos of officers in the South that have come out strongly against this, that they want better policing. And I think that it should be more of a regular thing, that more officers that are trying to do the job the right way, they have the added responsibility. And I've been talking about this over the last couple of days on my show. It sucks that they have that added responsibility, but it's added responsibility of when they see someone doing the job illegally or incorrectly or not the way that they were trained, they have a responsibility to step in. We saw one instance of it play out almost. It was macabre how similar the situation was in Seattle, where you have an officer with his knee on someone's neck. And thank God that the other officer was either aware that they were being videoed or had actually learned something from last week and moved his partner's knee off of the neck of that citizen. And those are the steps that we need to take when we start talking about police reform. And what bothers me, Chuck, is that scares people. Like, the idea of police reform overall scares people. And I wish that the officers that do consider themselves good officers would put some checks and balances on the people that are spokespeople for the Fraternal Order of Police. Because anytime that I see any one of those spokespeople get in front of a camera or a microphone, they spout dangerous rhetoric that's dog whistle stuff. And if those are the people that are representing the police, how do you think the rank and file are? Like, it can't be them walking around without responsibility to the citizens that they're supposed to protect and serve. And we can't be in a place where the political structure of our cities, our states, and our country are then afraid to put checks and balances on police for fear of political or physical backlash. If the people who carry guns and have badges, other police officers, are afraid of what bad police officers might do to them, what chance do any of us have if they're afraid? It's okay for you to empathize with those police officers that are out there on the front lines.
Yeah.
The job that they do is hard. And I'm not ignorant to that. like part of my thing when it comes to the idea of police reform, I think that number one, police officers should be paid more. I really do. I don't think that they're paid enough. I don't think that they get enough training when it comes to de-escalation. I think most police departments, they give lip service to it, but they don't actually do it. And one of the things that I really wish that they would allow for is for officers to get more time off and for them to get mental health screenings and treatment. Those things are really important when you're talking about having them deal with some of the worst things in our society. They are the ones that run to that, and there should be respect paid for that. But let's take care of them so that they understand their place in society and that they have a better understanding of what it means to be in those situations and the responsibility of life that they have. That's where we're at. And it's simple. Chuck, here's the thing. So you and I probably feel similarly about empathy for these cops that are on the front line, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there's still officers out there that are shooting rubber bullets at people. And that was not the way that those things are meant to work. You're supposed to shoot those things into the ground first.
People will get the message.
And those are the types of things that are frustrating because you want to believe that everyone is trying to do their job to the best of their ability.
But here's the thing that concerns me. I mean, we're all human beings. These guys are tired, right?
Yes.
They're testy.
They're overworked.
They're overworked. They've been taking this. And so people are going to make more and more mistakes. And I mean, this needs to stop. And, you know, actually, let me go over. I wrote this down. Brian Jordan, former Major League Baseball player, wrote this on social media. And this is maybe something you can relate to or understand. He said, cities and states need to bring back community policing, police youth programs, police youth sports. Because when he was growing up, police had a positive image in his community. That's been lost in many, many communities. Now, we're going to have to, as a society, change all of this. But that's the first, I mean, I'm looking for solutions. That seemed to make sense to me. What do you think?
I think that's a great thing to add into all of this. That yes, the community policing aspect to me is really important. If you have cops that are from Canaryville or from Beverly, do they really understand? Are they part of the community when they walk in Inglewood or into Little Village? I know that you can't just always match up people who are from the areas that you're having them patrol. But I do think that there needs to be more of it. There needs to be more people that understand the communities beyond looking at it as an other or an outsider and saying, oh, well, you know, I work in the first district, but, you know, I live on 99th and Western. Those are two different worlds. And once you step into them and you see how different it is, it becomes a little bit easier to treat it as if it's stereotypical. And that's why I agree with Brian, where there does need to be a connection. There's the concept of the beat cop, like that doesn't exist anymore, that police officers aren't walking a beat. And it's probably because it wasn't that efficient. As populations grew, it wasn't that efficient because they were covering more territory. But I do think that there's value in it. That there's value, and I'll just give it from my own personal experience. When I'm dealing with, I've honestly never had a bad interaction with CPD or with the University of Chicago police, who I think are technically state police officers. And those are the officers that I interact with the most. I have had bad interactions with small town or with suburban police officers. And I've had a couple of good experiences with them too. But when I'm interacting with these police officers, they know me, I know them. they can de-escalate situations easier. If there was something that was going on with me, they can pull me aside and say, hey, Lawrence, I know that your mother didn't raise you like this. Why are you acting like this? That, and there's a mutual respect that ends up growing out of that. With that going, with that not happening as much, there isn't. There is a inherent distrust of police in the Black community, especially. But it's not just the Black community. I mean, it's poor whites, it's Latinos, it's a lot of different people don't have a great relationship with police. And I think that they could do a couple of things, and what Brian suggested would definitely be something that I would consider to be part of an overarching objective to make those relationships better.
All right. So the thing that gets me just so angry is the looting, is the just destroying of neighborhoods. And I'm also, everyone who loots, I'm trying to look into their eyes, look into their souls and ask why. And I don't know the answers. I think they're all different answers why they're doing it. What do you think?
I think that's a good way to put it. And that's why I'll go back to what we were talking about at the beginning. We're all in this place that we've never been before. The world is so heavy. You think about the economic impact of what's happened with the pandemic. Now add that to all of the different things that have put some communities in a bad economic spot to begin with. People are not working. Children are at home all day when they weren't at home all day. You put all of those things in a blender, and then you add societal pressures that you were hoping would be resolved by now, and yet they continue to rear their ugly head. And I think that I understand anyone that goes, well, why would people who are rioting or looting do that to businesses in their own community? It's a valid question, and it's one that's really difficult to understand. And it breaks my heart. Like it breaks my heart to see entrepreneurs that in theory are trying to uplift the community by starting a business and providing a service for people in the community, because usually those businesses have to do that because there isn't a Target or a Walmart in those areas where a person could walk to and get to. It's a shame when you see it. The thing that really gets me angry, and it's not to completely ignore the violence and the destruction in downtown and River North, but the Gucci store is going to get made whole insurance-wise. Some of these businesses that entrepreneurs have put together on the South and West Side, they'll never open again. And it's a dooming of economic destruction for not just them, but maybe another generation of their family. And that's why it's so hard to wrap your mind around, because there are so many different things that are put into this stew. And I mean, Chuck, I can tell you right now, man, I'm looking outside and my neighbor, I live on a great block on the South Side, and my neighbors all kind of look out for each other. And we've been talking, you know, from backyard to backyard over the last few days. I know that there are places not too far from here where there is problems. There is going to be destruction, and trying to step in and do it and fix it is a remarkable challenge. And that's where, when for me, I get to the allocation of resources with police, where I saw hundreds of police officers on the corner of North and LaSalle last night.
Yeah, that got me. That I was wondering what that was all about, because there wasn't much going on there. But then again, I think later in the night there was. Maybe they were anticipating that. That might have been that.
I'm sure it was. But yeah. Once there wasn't anything, I mean, I saw sirens going up and down my street And not too far from me on Stony Island, there was a ton of destruction. Yeah. And I just kept wondering, like, did we get this right? Did we deploy the department the correct way? And I'm leaning towards no, and I haven't seen a good argument from the superintendent or the mayor to suggest otherwise. But these are all things that go into the idea of making sure that we have real conversations about how do we go about reforming not just the police and particular and specific officers, but how do we reform the system of policing to a place where citizens feel safe and citizens feel like they're being protected by those people.
What gives you hope? And I'll just say something that gives me hope is that when I see film, video, whatever you want to call it, of the civil rights movement in the 60s, you didn't see a ton of white people out there. You know, it was like, it was African Americans, it was their fight. And they had a fight for it. And now obviously white people had to help as well. But what gives me hope and it makes me feel good is when I do see so many white people, not just whether they're protesting, but just all around America who are in it and want to see change. And you put that together, as painful and fearful as we are right now, when I see that, that's going to be, I think, the legacy of all this. At least that's my hope. What do you think?
That's the next challenge. How does one go about being a good ally in this? That's kind of where we're at right now. And I think that there are steps that people can take where some of it is recognizing that when people of color tell you something, it's from their experience. And you can add it to your own collective and say, oh, well, that's Lawrence's experience or that's Ozzy's experience as a person of color. What can I do to help make their lives better? Or more equal, maybe not even better, but more equal to what it is that I have every day. That's a step in the right direction, the concept of being an ally. What gives me hope is in a lot of cases over the last 48 hours, seeing people who do want to ally and are trying to figure out how to do it the right way. Whether they're reaching out to men of color or people of color and lending their support. The support is probably the biggest hurdle. Like to step into a place where you go, there's clearly something wrong, and maybe you can't put your finger on exactly what's wrong, but you sense it amongst your friends, and then you reach out to them. That's a big step, and it's an important step. And that's something that does give me hope. Then that next step is to make sure that if you see or hear things that are untoward, that make you uncomfortable, it's okay for you to call someone out for that. If there's stuff that you know is being said about a particular group of people and it makes you uncomfortable as a white male, I'm gonna use you, Chuck, as the example on this. If it makes you uncomfortable, then it is incumbent upon you to check those people and say, yo, I don't know who you think you're talking to, but that's not how I roll, because I know how that impacts my friends that might be Black or Latinx or LGBTQA or gender fluid. Like, the fact that you would lend your voice to defending those people's honor and your relationships with those people, that's where the next big hurdle is. And that's where we can start to really make change. It's similar to what I'm talking about with police officers overall. Once we get to the place where the rank and file inside police departments say, I've had enough. I don't want to ever go out with Officer X anymore. because I know what he's about. And you go, you're able to go to your captain or your lieutenant and say, this person doesn't belong on the force. Once we get to there, then we've made real reform.
I think the reform's coming.
I hope so.
I mean, it has to. It really has to, because the society will not take it.
I mean, I hope that's the case. But Chuck, I worry that we've already moved on from the fact that George Floyd has been murdered to us really doing an analysis of the protests themselves. And I want us to stay. It's okay for us to stay here and go, what happened to George Floyd? And how can we make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else? And not just Black people. Right. There are plenty of people who end up in situations where they are brutalized by the police. How can we go about protecting those people? And we're kind of used to it. And I think that there are some, I'm going to sound like a get off my lawn dude here for a second. I think that when it comes to the way our news cycles work now, and I think when it comes to the concept of instant gratification of us as consumers, we are very quick to move on. And
yeah,
want
I don't
to move
go
on.
Ahead. Yeah, this doesn't feel like a move on. This I've really doesn't. This is a once in a lifetime situation. That's how I think.
I really hope that you're right, but I'm not that much younger than you. And I thought the Rodney King videotape, can you believe we're saying videotape?
Yeah.
That videotape was going to change everything. And it didn't, you know, like, so I'm hopeful.
But,
like,
yeah, but are. I think what this is like 100 Rodney Kings, because this is Rodney King was LA, and there were a lot of, what do you want to call them? White people, politicians all over the country that could basically say, that's not my problem.
Right.
That's
this LA's doesn't happen problem. Here.
Yes. This is happening everywhere. So I feel like I think this is, there's just too much momentum being built here to have this be, and I hear what you're saying about the news cycle. We forget things. This seems like something that will never be forgotten ever.
I hope so. I hope that, and it's encouraging that there are so many protests and the peaceful protests. I
love that.
I've witnessed two of them in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I witnessed a march down Cottage Grove yesterday that was unbelievably peaceful and organized, and the same thing on Lake Park and 53rd Street in Hyde Park. Same deal, completely organized. And what you had in both of those situations, you had the community and the police working together for a common goal. That's not always easily done, and I appreciate when those things are done that way. There needs to be more of it. But for there to be more of it, there has to be accountability. And if the people don't get the accountability that we're looking for, a lot of these problems are going to crop up yet again.
Yes, and people do not want that again. One last thing, and it was you on the radio today on The Score, and you got emotional talking about, well, I'd rather not say what you were talking about. Why don't you explain why you got so emotional on the radio?
There are a lot of things. Like, I always describe myself as like this emotional roller coaster, and I feel like I've gotten my emotions in check. Like, it was quite cathartic for me to talk about this on the air. But there were a lot of things that kind of led me down that path. Like, I teach, and so I have this real affection for working with young people. And I feel like whether it's the seniors or any type of students that you're dealing with, they've been dealt such a raw deal. And seeing that the CPS students were going to have their, you know, the city had been giving out lunches still, even though that we were in the middle of a pandemic, which I applaud. But seeing that cut off today, it really did something to me, because I view the children of the South and the West Side as if they're my own. And I mean, that's extended now. I was really happy to see how there were, if given the opportunity, if presented with these are the problems, here are some small ways that you can help. I saw a real bright light when it came to people being willing to help. And that's encouraging. The restaurant Caesars, that's kind of known as the killer margarita place. I love that place. They had decided that they were going to make lunches for CPS students today. And they put together like a two-hour window that students could come by and get themselves something to eat. That's great. I go ahead and mention it on the air. When I get off the air, I find out, because so many people wanted to be a part of that, that they had to create a link on their website for donations. And to know that I had a little bit of impact where they're raising money that is going to help to keep some of our CPS students fed is something I will never forget. And I'm glad that they, I guess technically we partnered up on something like this. It's that type of stuff where you see people who are willing to give and willing to be accounted for. Like, they're willing to be like, yes, I want to help. I know this doesn't help everything, but in this small way, I can help. Those are the things that get me emotional. When you're from here, I'm from here. We love this place. I'm not saying that Chicagoans love their city more than other people do, but there's an affection for it. For me in particular, there's an affection for the South Side. I am a son of the South Side of Chicago. It's why I live here now.
So am I, by the way.
I know you are. I know you are. That's what I'm saying. Like,
not just South suburbs. Like, my parents grew up in the South Side.
That's right.
Right.
Like, I have affection for it, and I want to see it thrive and flourish. And so when you see some of the things that were destructive, that hurts. When you then add in not being able to hug your parents because of a pandemic, all of that factors in. You're not able to commiserate with your friends to try and figure out ways to figure it out or just get human contact with people. You throw all of that into a gumbo. And that's why I was super emotional seeing that people were willing to go outside of themselves and show real empathy and say, things aren't good for me either, Lawrence. Things suck right now, but I got $10. And I'll give $10 so that two students can eat today.
What was the name of the website that they can go to? Do you know it off the top of your head?
You know what? I have it right here. If you just search Caesar's restaurant, the killer margaritas, you'll find it. But hang on. Let me make sure I get it right. Because the cool thing about Caesar's is that they had actually created this once COVID started, because they weren't a takeout place. They were a place where you go and get your margarita on. But they were able to put this together and show some real ingenuity overall for them, which I thought was awesome. So if you just search Caesar's Margarita Chicago, you'll find it. And then inside there, they have a feed a child link. And you can't beat that.
It's amazing. Like, this is a place known for killer margaritas.
How about that?
They're transitioning to help the kids. I love it.
How about it? Like, you can't, like, and I, you know, I made my donation. I'm hopeful to get over there and grab myself a meal, you know, to bring it home, but because I want to support, like, I want to support places that are doing stuff like that for our students. And that's one of the things that gets me fired up, is our students are already at an incredible disadvantage. And you add all these things on top of them, it's hard for them to overcome it. So to see people willing to lend a hand, it makes me very emotional. It makes me proud. When we've been living in a lot of darkness, like to see even just a glimmer of light is all we really need to replenish that parts of those parts of ourselves that make us want to be better. I was completely down this morning. Chuck, when I got up this morning, I went and toured around my neighborhood. I got on my bike and I wanted to see what places I could help out. What places could I let people know about where they could help out? I went all the way around Kenwood, Hyde Park, Woodlawn, Jackson Park, and a little bit in South Shore. And I got back home and I said, this is horrible. You know, a lot of places in Hyde Park were fine, but there were some places in Jackson Park that'll never be the same. The Walmart on 47th and Cottage Grove in Kenwood is totally ransacked. And you don't want to see those things in your own community. But as I went and told my story and other people shared their stories, to see the coming together of people in different places was remarkable. And it's those things that you have to hold on to. One of my really good friends, her niece graduated from high school yesterday, and the family went and celebrated together. And she said to me, she was having a really hard time being in a celebratory mood. And I saw one of the pictures she posted, and I said, you know, the picture you posted made me smile, you know?
And you just made me smile.
See? It's those little moments that we have to hold on to tightly if we're going to get through any of this stuff.
We'll get through it. Hey, thanks for coming on. This is such a dark time, but I do feel, you know, it's cathartic. I'm talking to you and I'm hearing helicopters flying over my place.
Yeah, man.
Like dreading the night to come. But you know what? It's you know what? I'm going to use Kenny Williams, a Kenny Williams quote. We are Chicago tough.
We are. We're Southside tough. We're Chicago tough. And Chuck, look, I love this podcast. It's one of the podcasts that I subscribe to. So I thank you for having me on it. I'm so looking forward to talking about whatever version of the 2020 White Sox we see. I don't care if there aren't fans at the stands. I just want to see Tim Anderson, and I want to see Lucas Giolito, and I want to see Yoan Moncada be an MVP candidate. I really want those things. And I appreciate the White Sox as an organization. I feel like they've stepped up big time, and they have some personalities now on that team that are going to allow for them to have bigger impact. Tim Anderson is a rock star. And I know you know that he's a rock star. Lucas is a rock star. And those guys' character, it makes it very easy to root for them.
Yeah, if you're a White Sox fan, these are the kind of, not just athletes, these are the kind of human beings that you want to be cheering for. There is a depth, there's a character, and there's a care. They care.
They care about the South Side. Like that, yeah. It's not fake. When you talk to Tim Anderson about it, that dude is in these streets. He is out here. He is out here working with youth. He is out here at ballparks. Like, it's not just about him becoming famous. It's about him really trying to make a difference in the way the game is perceived and the way that the game is played. Same thing with Lucas. It's same thing with Aloy. Like, these guys are dudes that you want to be around. So I'm hoping that we get baseball back and we can celebrate that along with hopefully making some societal changes that will make experiences better for everyone. But like I said, I love this podcast. I learned a lot from this podcast. So I'm glad that you were able to have me on.
Well, it's great having you. And you were talking about Tim Anderson. And as a bonus, David Kaplan and myself spoke with Tim Anderson on Sports Talk Live today about all of this. So I'm going to play that for you in a moment. But Lawrence, thanks again for coming on. And we will do this, I'd say, justly. Let's do it soon.
Soon.
I'm crossing my fingers for a season. You know what? If there's a season or not, you're coming on. So there you go.
Chuck, the player's talking about June 30th. They're talking about June 30th. Let's go.
Let's do it. I know. Believe me, I've been there many times. All right, Lawrence, you're the man. Thank you. And here is our conversation with Tim Anderson, sharing it with you here on the White Sox Talk podcast.
This is Mike Tirico introducing you to Sports Uncovered. The debut episode will explore I'm Back, the two-word facts from Michael Jordan announcing the most famous comeback in NBA history.
That's the most impactful two words ever.
Subscribe to Sports Uncovered for free wherever you listen to podcasts.
The batting champion in the American League in 2019 and a great friend of our show. He is the awesome Tim Anderson. Tim, we've seen the last 7 days have been very trying for so many people. What are your emotions right now as a father, husband, not just as a baseball player, what you've witnessed?
It's definitely different. We're all going through such a tough time right now that, you know, I think everybody's confused. Just for me, man, you know, I wanted to capture those moments. I wanted to capture those moments because I think, you know, pictures speak louder than words. And, you know, just being able to capture those moments, that's something for me to share, you know, to my kids, to also witness the time that we are in, which is, you know, definitely a crazy time. But, you know, man, we all just try, you know, just try to stay positive through, you know, certain situations and try to be understanding through certain situations. You know, let's, you know, just trying to, you know, do what really makes sense.
Tim, as an African-American, can you explain the anger that is being felt right now throughout our country?
Yeah, man, people are angry and frustrated. I think that's why you see some of the things that are going on, you know, because they're feeling unheard. They're feeling like no one's paying attention to them. So I think that's why they're doing the things that they are doing, you know, looting and just going, you know, all over the place with it. I think they're doing this thing because those people feel unheard. Those people are hurting. Those people are angry. You know, man, when you're going through tough situations, you know, you never know what can happen. And I think that's one of those situations, man. You really don't know what can happen. And, you know, people are just, you know, people are angry and fed up. And, you know, I think this is what it has got to this point. And, you know, we didn't want to see it get here, but, you know, this is where we're at with it.
Tim, I said this morning when I was talking on my radio show, and I'm saying it here again on TV, that 4 years ago, Colin Kaepernick took a knee in his way, a peaceful protest to say that people of color are being mistreated. And I didn't like that he did it the way he did it, and I was wrong. And I said that multiple times today. I wish we could go back and listen to what he was saying and understand he was trying to do it in a peaceful way. What is your thoughts when you look back where we were 4 years ago, everyone got angry with him, where we are today, and he's been validated?
Yeah, like you said, you know, I think that was a peaceful way to, you know, explain your feelings and explain, you know, what your message is. But now we have gotten to this point. Kaepernick gave us an example of what this was, but he was unheard as well. So now we're getting to this point to where, you know, people are unheard, and now it's just, man, anger is coming from all over the place, and people just doing whatever, you know, to get heard, to send that message, to be understood.
You posted some videos, or sorry, some photos on social media. It looks like you went into the city to see for yourself what had happened. So that being said, what did you see and how did you feel when you saw it?
Oh man, definitely. You know, man, it's a feeling that you can't really, you know, you can't really explain. You just have to, you know, you just have to see it for yourself and kind of, you know, be in that moment. But it's something I've never seen before. Something I never witnessed before. Only things that I heard about. So I think that's why I was so, you know, so eager and so, you know, I was actually excited. I wanted to go down and see it. So I was so eager and excited to go down and shoot pictures of it, you know, to capture those moments, you know, to have pictures to show my family, to have pictures to show my kids that can witness this moment. I know some of those pictures, you know, may have said some things that you know, we may have not have needed at a moment, but sometimes you have to show the good, the bad, and the ugly. And for me, man, I just wanted to capture those moments to, you know, to have for myself. I think everybody understand, you know, when I shoot out content, it has a, you know, has a great meaning behind it. And I think that's one of those ones that has a great meaning. That's history. And, you know, who knows where it may end up. It may end up in, you know, history books. So, you know, it's just, if you just remove me from the picture, you know, man, it's dope art.
Tim, a very close friend of mine was a basketball player, and now he's on television. We had this lengthy conversation over the weekend about what was going on. And he is a person of color. And he said to me, he's like, dude, you're like a brother to me. He goes, but you will never know what it's like to see the lights go on in a police car behind you.
Right.
And you get pulled over and it's just a speeding ticket. I get pulled over and I don't know where it's going to lead. He goes, and on top of it, I'm 6'9". When I get out of a car, everybody's already, uh-oh.
Right.
Have you ever been in a situation like that?
Yeah. You know, it's always, you know, you're always scared when you hear those sirens, because you never know what may happen. You know, for me, man, I just try to, you know, do what's right. You know, be respectful, and just try to do what makes sense. If you're going to give me a ticket, you know, you're going to ask for my license registration. Here you go. If you're going to give me a ticket, cool. I'll take my ticket and I'll move on. You know, just trying to keep down, you know, confusion in such a moment that's already, you know, is already awkward and in a weird situation. So, you know, just trying to be the bigger person and do what makes sense, because we all have a family that we're trying to go home to at the end of the day.
Yeah, Tim, your kids are really, really young. Say they were 12, 10 years old.
Yeah.
What would you tell them about what's going on right now?
Man, I'll just explain it, you know, as much as I can. You know, now my daughter is asking, because there's, you know, we're watching it on the news, and, you know, we're just trying to, you know, be real, be honest about it. That way there's no confusion as she grow older about it. And I think right now is a moment to definitely talk about it, why it's going on. So, you know, just really telling her as much as she could to kind of understand, because she is at a young age, but I think she kind of picks up on things quick, and, you know, just being open with it. You know, there's nothing to hide. It's all on TV. So, you know, we're just being honest and being open and trying to lead her in the best way that we can, and be the best example to, you know, how to treat people and how to move forward, you know, through tough situations.
Tim, do you feel like, as an African-American star in this town, and you are a star, you're a batting champion, that doesn't come around every day, that you also have a responsibility to take societal stands and social issues because people listen to you?
Yeah, you know, but you try not to do too much. You have to do what, you know, do what your lane is. You know, you have to inspire and motivate in your lane. You know, man, for me, man, when you've been on both sides of things, you know, I have family that's in tough situations that came from nothing, that are having tough situations that they're going through. But I overcome those, and now I'm here in such a great situation that, you know, that I never really imagined. So, you know, I just try to stay in the middle. I just try to stay in the middle, right in the middle. So, and give both sides love and just be and respect both sides. And, you know, just also move the way and just be the best me. You know, I only could be the best me. I try not to be nobody else. And, you know, just be honest and open about every situation.
It's such a tough moment for the African-American community, yeah, for police officers, for this, yeah, country right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
What gives you hope right now that we as a country will get through this and be better?
Man, just, you know, just try to think positive. You know, it's tough to, you know, think positive, but you just try to think positive. Just imagine, you know, positive, everybody coming together. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about love, man. It's all about rubbing people the right way. It's all about respecting people the right way. Everybody want to be respected a certain way. And I think that you should give it to them, you know, regardless of what color or what race. So, yeah, man, just really doing what makes sense. And, you know, I think it's just, we got to stop, you know, trying to figure out, I mean, stop trying to, you know, think that we have the upper hand on people when we're all even, we're all human at the end of the day. We all put our pants on the same way. You know, you may just put right leg first or left leg first. But yeah, man, you just try to, you know, just try to stay positive through, you know, tough situations. I think it makes you gravitate towards the ones you really love in these situations. And even if it happens to be people of a different color, man, you gravitate towards that love because everybody wants to understand and understand and kind of hear each other out at such a moment like this. So I think it's also bringing, you know, it's a positive, man. It's also bringing all races together through certain situations. So I think that's the positive that you got to take out of it. and you know, man, and just, you know, just keep moving, man, and in a positive way. You just imagine a positive way, and you know, everything always work out. It always does. So I think this is just another challenge for the world. I think we'll get through it just fine.
Well, we've got a global pandemic. Hopefully we all survive that.
Yeah.
Just went through what we've been going through. Here's hoping you're a two-time batting champion when I get to talk to you again at the end of this season.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm still in. We're in a whole nother season, so we ain't played a game, so I'm still a champ.
Not at all.
So it's already two times.
Thank you for taking time for us. We greatly appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right. My thanks to Tim Anderson, David Kaplan, Lawrence Holmes, and all of you for listening to the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to their special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. I very much look forward to talking White Sox baseball on the next White Sox Talk podcast. But so glad we did this one here today. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.